Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hi, everybody. Just dropping in to say that today's episode is a release from our Patreon vault that was originally released April 30th, 2021. If you would like access to all of our bonus episodes, you can become a patron at patreon.com/tsdwpodcast or just enjoy this little taste of what that life might be like. We will be back next week with a regular episode. Until then, Happy New Year. We love you a lot. Enjoy.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Everyone, welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, April bonus episode number two.
Number two, baby.
Number two. Here it is. The second one. You picked the movie, which is pretty cool.
Oh, it's true. You did. You had a lot of Tony had so many freaking suggestions for spooky movies.
Oh, I didn't even know there were that many movies in the world, and you suggested them all.
How many suggestions did we get? Didn't we get almost 100 or something like that?
We definitely did, yes. We got like...
That's wild.
80-something comments, and some of you recommended more than one movie. It's a lot of movies.
A lot of movies. Don't worry, we've added them all to our like to-do list, which, again, could take years. But fret not, they'll come eventually. Mm-hmm. But the one that won is The Grudge, the 2004 Grudge. Don't worry. The remake.
We did get a lot of people very worried that we would do the 2020 version.
Yes, when I made the polls, I used an image from the remake unknowingly. And I think people really were stressed about that.
They were so stressed.
I think generally speaking, Tony Heads, and I may end up being wrong about this, but when we pitch a movie, we mean the original.
Yeah.
I think in general, right? Unless...
Usually, yeah.
Unless we say, like, we might do one day the Evil Dead remake. But that's because we already did the original Evil Dead. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And that's a lesson for me as well, who has mistakenly done...
this is mostly friendly that we're saying this.
Watched the wrong version of the movie in the past. This is mostly just a reminder for me.
To be fair, this is... the 2004 version is also a remake of the original Japanese version.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Well, forget everything I said.
So I was going to say, you know, that maybe that's not true.
But this time right now, the 2004 Grudge, which is apparently the middle Grudge.
It was directed by Takashi Shimizu, written by Steven Susco, based on the aforementioned original film that was written by Takashi Shimizu, starring, buckle up.
Okay.
I forgot. We're about to go back to 2004, a real time capsule. Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
Jason Baer, who I don't know if you guys, is maybe not as much of a name, but he was the star of Roswell, which I was a big fan of. Okay. Clea DuVall. Is it Clea? Oh,
it's Clea.
Clea DuVall, also big 2004. That was a good time for her.
That was a good time. And you know what also? I think now is a really good time for her.
That's true.
She's kind of killing it. She's directing. She rules. She married my friends. She officiated their wedding. So good time for Clea.
Good time for Clea. Bill Pullman.
What?
And then these ones are not going to be as memorable names, but... William Mapother, Katie Strickland, Grace Zabriskie, Takako Fuji, Yuya Ozeki, and Ryo Ishibashi.
Okay.
Wow, I'm so excited. This is a movie that I don't really know anything about other than this movie came out in peak me channel surfing alone at night in my house. Like, because I would have been in middle school or early high 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been 13, which is like peak. I don't have a babysitter, but I still am scared and I'm home alone and something scary comes on the TV and I freak out. This movie was a big one for me that I was like, oh God, no, look at it.
Oh no.
So I'm excited to be a grown up and I can hear about it now.
I somehow never saw this movie until this week. I don't know why. I never have seen it. I saw The Ring in theaters and for some reason just skipped The Grudge.
Did they come out around the same time?
The Ring came out in 2002 and kind of spurred
you
this.
Saw The Ring in theaters in 2002?
I did. And you know what's so weird is like I don't remember being scared of it. I remember thinking it was really cool, and when the horse jumped off the boat I was like, how did they do that?
Oh my God.
What a mature young child you were, Samantha.
Because you would have been like 12.
Yeah, 13, I think.
13 then? Oh, my God. That's insane, Sammy.
It's really weird. I can't explain it. Because I didn't love horror movies at that time.
But you were pretty punk at that time, though, right?
You were very pretty punk. We've seen the pictures.
You're pretty punk. So, I mean...
You could handle it.
You weren't some, like, wilting flower, you know? Like,
no.
You were fucking punk.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I was, Emily, just like you at home, scared. Because also when I, in 2004, that's when my family got cable, which was very exciting for me. But it also meant that like The Ring and The Grudge and all those movies would be on HBO all the time.
Yes.
And so I would be like, I would dare myself. I would be like, Henley, just hop in for a second.
Just take a peek.
And then I would, and then I would get way too scared and then change it back to, you know, VH1 music videos.
Yeah.
Just the only thing I really watched.
VH1 and MTV were parental control locked on my TV.
Are you serious? My parents did not know how to do anything of that.
Too sexy. I was not allowed to. So I was like, so that just like triggered me remembering how fucking left out and dorky I felt about the fact that I like couldn't watch music videos. I couldn't watch music videos. I couldn't watch TRL.
Yeah, that's pretty lame. That's pretty lame of your parents. Not gonna lie. If Emily's parents, if you're listening, that was a lame choice.
They are. They've both separately joined Toni Collette.
I love you so much. You did a really good job as parents. But like, if you were to do it again, I think let me watch MTV.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't have cable, so it was not allowed, but I just couldn't watch it. So I'd get so excited going to friends' house to watch VH1 and MTV and be like, ooh, put it on. Let's not talk. Let's just watch this.
Yeah. I was similarly, if I went to friends' houses, it was with that and junk food where I'd be like, hi, it's really nice to hang out with you. Can I have all your snacks and watch TV?
Yeah, snacks. Yum. But so yeah, The Grudge was the next kind of, The Ring spurred all these remakes of Japanese horror films, and The Grudge was kind of the next one, I believe. And its budget was $10 million, opening weekend $40 million.
Holy shit!
And to date, $187 million.
Holy shit!
That's a big return.
Yeah, the sequel, The Grudge 2, was greenlit on the Monday after the opening weekend.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And unlike the other Japanese horror remakes like The Ring, Dark Water, Pulse, and One Missed Call, this was the only film that actually remained in Japan instead of moving the story to America, which is interesting. Before filming, the cast and crew went through a ceremony where they were blessed so that nothing bad could happen to them for filming, which, you know, we've done our Cursed Films episode. Seems like they had heard some of the cursed filmed rumors.
I mean, nice to know that you could just bless yourself and then everything's fine.
Yeah, but better safe than sorry.
Do that.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah. Better safe than sorry. Yeah.
Wait, isn't Sarah Michelle Gellar still married to Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Yes.
You better fucking believe it.
Oh, I love that. I love it. I fucking love that. They have like three kids.
They're so under the radar. I don't even know.
I don't know either.
I will say, I did audition for a commercial a couple years ago that it was like, it was a Super Bowl ad and they're like, so we have already cast Sarah Michelle Gellar, but in case she bails, we are auditioning to do. And it was like, what the fuck is? And then guess what? Sarah Michelle Gellar did the commercial. It was so weird. Anyway, that's just what I think about when I think about her now. I'm like, what was that about?
Like, is she notorious for bailing on commercials or something?
Why? If you have Sarah Michelle Gellar, what am I doing here?
Yeah, what's the point? Like, what am I doing? That's great.
Anyway. But yeah, I think they're very happily married and good for them.
Well, speaking of happily married people, Jason Baer met Katie Strickland on the set of this film, despite not sharing any scenes together, and they got married 2 years later, and they are also still married to this day.
They didn't have any scenes together, but somehow they met.
Somehow.
By doing the same movie. Of course they met. Good for them. A love story is what this movie is.
Yeah, that's what this is. It's a love story.
This one is really funny. So you guys probably remember the infamous, maybe you don't, the like shower scene where the hand comes out of the hair.
Vaguely.
I guess that's what we used the image for in the poll.
I have a mental picture, yeah.
Well, while filming the infamous shower scene, Sarah Michelle Gellar discovered she was allergic to Japanese water as it caused her skin to itch. So to properly film the scene safely, Gellar was dressed in black hefty garbage bags from the waist down and a little tube top. Like, what?
Wait, how are you allergic to Japanese water? What's up with Japanese water?
I'm allergic to Japanese water. It's kind of a, just the thing about me is Japanese water specifically, I'm very allergic.
What is that? What? I've never heard of that before in my life.
I mean, I'm less concerned about that and more concerned about why they thought a tube top would do anything. A tube top is not water repellent.
No.
It's just cloth.
Couldn't they just put a filter on the shower head?
I don't know.
Anyway, interesting. Okay, well, that's interesting.
And this is a spooky one. The type of ghost that Kayako and Toshio are is based on the Japanese legend of the Onryo, a vengeful spirit that can actually physically manifest itself to attack and kill victims. And I feel like we might have mentioned that as well in The Ring, because that
sounds familiar. Yeah.
So an Unreal.
Ooh, that's scary.
Scary, spooky. Scary. Did it scare you, Sammy, watching it?
You know, yeah, there was a few jump scares that got me, but if I had seen this movie in 2004, it would have fucking destroyed me. Yeah, I would have been terrified, but I'm incredibly brave now and so desensitized that it didn't scare me too bad. No, I didn't have any nightmares.
God, you're so brave.
Didn't feel spooked after.
Who knows if it would have scared you, though, because The Ring didn't really scare you.
That's true. But this is more. I don't know why this just feels different. This is. Okay. I don't know. I guess they are similar, obviously, but. I don't know. Like I said, I can't explain it.
Can't explain it.
But yeah, I like was afraid of scary movies at that time. And so I don't know how The Ring slipped through, but I think I was too scared to see The Grudge. And I do think it would have scared me a lot more than The Ring did.
Well, I'm excited to hear about it.
The film received 1 star out of 4 and is on Roger Ebert's most hated list, which I just thought was really interesting. Yeah.
Okay. I think that our boy Raj.
Our boy.
Sometimes is just having a bad day and makes wild choices on his movie reviews, because sometimes he's reviewed movies and given terrible ratings to things that are now classics. And I can't think of an example right now, but I do know this is true.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Our boy. Sometimes he's just having a bad day.
I forgot to mention also that Sam Raimi is a producer on this movie.
Our other boy.
Our other boy.
And the Grudge remake, I just wanted to talk about first. I haven't seen it. I've heard it's obviously horribly reviewed. People hated it, but it has so many good people in it. And I got really tempted in that, looking at the IMDb of it. Has Andrea Riseborough in it. And Jackie Weaver, who I really like. And the cast is very good. And John Cho is the main guy in it. And I like him a lot, too. And so I could see how people might have gone into it with very high expectations, because it looks like it should have been good and scary. And now I'm curious about how they fucked it up.
How they messed it up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I might watch it.
Did it come out during the pandemic?
It came out right at the beginning. Yeah. I think it was February 2020 that it came out. So it was.
It's a weird time to think about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we have to watch the trailer?
We do.
I'm very scared to watch this trailer to this day. I'm like, this is one that I'm nervous about.
Well, get ready.
Here it comes.
Here it goes.
Baby.
Yeah, fuck.
Ew, fuck.
I was in that house. I felt something was wrong. What happened there?
I knew it was coming, and it still really, I screamed.
Oh, it's so scary when the part, the elevator with the little creepy boy passing through it.
Did a kid open his mouth and meow like a cat?
Yeah, I laughed at that part.
I laughed at that part too. Also, the first second that Sarah Michelle Gellar is on the screen, I just was like, oh wow, Buffy. Like, that's all I can think of.
I was really transported back to 2004.
She was the only star that mattered at a time.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I did.
No, but I've been thinking lately I should watch it now. I bet I would love it now. But it was too scary for me.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that you watched it, Henley. There was a few episodes that were really scary.
I didn't watch it that much. I only watched a few episodes, but actually it was one of the things in the beginning of the pandemic when Tim and I were just looking for random shows to get into. We tried to get into Buffy the Vampire Slayer and it didn't work, but I still watched a bunch of the episodes. It's because the episodes are like an hour long and it's the same thing every time, which we were so used to in early 2000s or whatever. Now it's like, I can't watch 22 episodes of like the same thing happening over and over again.
22 episode hour long is tough. Commitment. And just as I was saying that, I was like, well, Riverdale. But again, Riverdale special, it's the only show that matters.
But also Riverdale is like so crazy.
Yeah, nothing is the same ever. No two episodes are ever the same. To its detriment often. It's like, what is happening?
Like, what's happening?
Yeah, fair.
Well, are you guys ready to hear about this freaking movie?
Let's hear about it.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, baby.
Oh my God, The Grudge. Oh my God, The Grudge.
Oh my God. I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they're feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? This is such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family friendly, low carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready to eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary and use code too scary for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code too scary so they know I sent you.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So we open on some text that we saw in the trailer that says, when someone dies in a fit of rage, a powerful curse is born. The curse gathers in that place of death. Those who encounter it will be consumed by its fury. Sounds bad.
Yeah, it sounds really bad.
I do not want to be consumed by its fury.
No. Also, if that's really true, that there's a lot of shit going around that we need to take care of.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
A lot of onryos.
Mm-hmm.
So then we see that we are in Japan, and we see Bill Pullman standing on a apartment balcony, kind of. He looks a little dazed. It's early morning. We see his partner still in bed sleeping. I can't remember if they're married or not, his wife. She kind of wakes up, hears that, like notices he's out of bed, says what's going on. He looks back at her and throws himself off the balcony to his death.
Oh, no. He's in the trailer a lot, too. So I'm wondering, at least I felt like he was in the trailer a lot.
No, it's just this little cameo. He's just in this movie just for this one scene. No, he is in the movie more.
Okay, okay. Cheers. You almost tricked me.
I almost got you. And his name is Peter, by the way. And then we get a title sequence. And one thing I will say about this movie that is scary, that I don't like, is the hair factor is high. And I don't like hair in life or in any hair that's out of the head. I have a problem like cleaning my own hair out of my own drains. I hate it.
That's interesting. That doesn't really bother me for some reason.
Some people it doesn't, but for me, I hate it.
I don't like wet hair.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't love wet hair, but it really also, I don't mind it.
Yeah.
And I mind a lot of things. So I'm happy to put that on the list of things I don't mind.
One time I had a plumber come when I like first moved in. And so I think it was the hair from the person that lived here before.
Ooh. I don't like this.
He's going to opt out. She's opting out.
They came and cleared it out. And the plumber was like, do you want to see it? And I was like, no, like obviously not. And I like made him not show it to me. But then afterwards, I was kind of curious and I was like, should I have looked at it? Like it was, it seemed to shock even him.
That's what happened when I got, remember I got a fucking cyst removed and afterwards they were like, would you like to see?
Oh, right.
No, what? No.
Some people really want to see. They want to like take it home.
I was like, get away from me and I will never look at something that was on the inside of my body. Excuse me.
It's like when they give you teeth, like after they pull a tooth and they're like, give it to you. And it's like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
Like, but I don't need this. Tooth,
it's like, well, I know what that is.
I've seen that. Well, so this opening sequence is like the titles are formed from hair. Like it's just hair swirling around the screen, forming into letters. And I was already like, yuck.
No,
I do not like this. And then we see a woman arriving at a house, at like a, we come to see that she is a caretaker coming to care for this elderly woman named Emma. The caretaker's name is Yoko. And Emma is basically, she looks like she maybe has some sort of dementia, or she's kind of catatonic. She just is sitting and staring, doesn't respond to questions. Yoko is kind of like, how are you today? Like, it's nice to see you again. Emma doesn't respond. Yoko just kind of goes around doing the cleaning, bathing Emma, and she uses the phone to make a phone call and is cleaning, sweeping around the house, kind of making her way upstairs. And as she gets to the second floor, she hears a noise coming from one of the rooms and like a creaking noise. And she walks into the room and hears what sounds like footsteps on the ceiling, but as far as she knows, there's no third floor. And then she hears a bang in a closet in this room and kind of slowly approaches this closet to inspect. And in any of these kind of scenes, I'm always like, I just wouldn't look, I don't think. I mean, maybe I would. If you heard a noise in like someone's, in my house, I think I would.
Is it daytime?
It's daytime, yeah.
I'm more likely to check it daytime.
Okay.
But I do have a closet that's pretty deep. It like starts in the dining room and goes under the stairs. And I'm afraid to look in the depths of that closet even when I'm in there. I like won't, because it like turns a corner, you know, and I'll never look past that corner.
That is. Because
what if someone lives there, you know?
Exactly. You don't want to know. They can keep living there as long as you don't find out.
I don't want to turn that corner and make eye contact with the person in my closet. Yeah. I'd rather not know. So I guess the answer is no, I would not check.
You'd check to a point.
To a point. Not past a corner.
Well, you're not going to like what happens in this closet.
Okay.
So she tiptoes towards it, opens it, and She looks around, nothing's in there, and then she sees that there is like a false top to this closet that slides off, and we see
I'm definitely not doing.
She slides off to reveal a hidden attic.
Oh no, a hidden attic is worse than a regular attic.
No,
it absolutely is. It's true. Within a closet, worse,
awful.
Somebody lives there for sure.
And she starts hearing this noise that's very upsetting. It's kind of like a clicking, but it's like someone breathing inward. It's like,
no.
But they made this noise, I read in some of the trivia, by like with comb bristles. It's like, and someone breathing in. So they like compiled these noises. It's very spooky. And so she hears, oh, do you have a comb?
Is it like that? Can you hear that?
A little bit. It's kind of like that.
Should I keep going?
Yeah, one more
time. I can't really hear it.
Hold on.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Spooky.
Cool.
And she hears that noise and then kind of hoists herself up. Well, she's like on her tiptoes, like looking around this attic. So just her head is there, and it's doing the good old 360 turning around, looking each direction, swiveling her head, and you know something's gonna be there. And I actually love, you see, so it's a girl or woman with like long black hair, black circles under her eyes, very pale skin, looks like a ghost, I guess, a ghost woman. And you see her behind Yoko before it makes the jump scare noise, which I liked because I jumped from seeing her and then it does a jump scare noise. And so it's like a 1-2 punch that I thought was very sneaky, and it worked well for me. And then Yoko sees her and starts screaming, and we just see a wide shot from further out of her like legs flailing as she is pulled up into this attic. And yep.
Does the Grudge Girl look a lot like the Ring Girl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Very I remember similar. That being like a thing, like people saying like, oh, the Grudge Girl, like that was like a probably like a popular Halloween costume at a time.
Yeah. I think if you dressed up as this for Halloween, people would not know which one you were.
There we go.
So then we cut to, we meet Sarah Michelle Gellar's character's name is Karen and her boyfriend's name is Doug. They are waking up in bed. They're exchange students, kind of getting ready to go to school. They are in Japan, and they have a cute little relationship. They like seem like they really love each other. They walk to class together. Karen goes into the building that she has class in, and she gets stopped by one of her, I'm guessing, advisors or something named Alex, who's played by Sam Raimi's younger brother or cousin or something. Ooh. I forgot to fully write down this trivia, but he's played by a Raimi. And he pulls her aside and says that Yoko didn't show up for caring for Emma today, and can I reassign this case to you? And this is going to be her first case. This is like what she's been doing. She's been volunteering at this place but hasn't had her own case assignment yet, so she seems a little nervous, and he's kind of like, don't worry, like you'll be great. And gives her Emma's file and sends her off to go do that. He's like, yeah, I don't know, Yoko is not answering, she must be sick or something, and sends Karen on her way. And as Karen is making her way through the streets of Tokyo, she seems very like fish out of water. She's like struggling to read the signs and the maps, and has to ask for help. But looks like she's like making a good effort. She speaks enough Japanese to get by, and eventually makes her way to finds the house and sees that Yoko's bike is still outside.
Oh, God. And don't go inside. Turn around.
And knocks on the door. There's no answer. Knocks again. Rings the bell. No answer. She tries it and it's unlocked. And she goes in and it's very messy inside. There's like chip wrappers everywhere, trash on the floors, and chairs are knocked over. And she looks toward Emma's bedroom and a hand smacks the window and it's a jump scare. And she like runs to open the door and it is Emma who has fallen out of bed. She has wet the bed and has like clearly been trying to take care of herself as best as she could. And Karen, you know, runs to, it's like, oh my God, quickly starts to clean her up, bathes her, starts doing laundry, cleans up the house. And again, is kind of talking to her like, I'm Karen. I'm subbing for Yoko. Emma's not speaking, not responding. And she goes upstairs. She's kind of cleaning the rest of the house. And again, here's a noise coming from that same room.
No.
And she goes into the room and sees the closet is completely taped up. Like every corner of it has been, it's like taped closed with duct tape. And she hears a cat meowing inside of it. And she looks confused and starts peeling the tape off to try to get this cat out. And
wait, so Emma taped the closet?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so she rips off the tape, gets the closet open, and sees a little notebook sitting on the floor of the closet, picks up the notebook, and as she's kind of thumbing through it, this cat meows at her from the side, frightens her, scares her, and she jumps back and sees that not only is there a cat, there's also a little boy sitting kind of curled up in the corner of this closet.
Oh boy.
She falls backwards, completely freaked out. And then we cut to her downstairs on the phone with Alex saying, you know, there's a little boy here. I don't know who he is. He's not speaking. Like, and one of the things that Alex had told her when he assigned the case to her was that her daughter-in-law takes care of her too. Takes care of Emma too. That she's usually there and she should have been back by now. And so Karen is saying to Alex, like, the daughter-in-law's not back yet. I don't know where they are. I don't know what to do. Like, just get here as fast as you can. I don't know who this kid is. I don't know what to do with him. So Alex is on his way. Karen opens up the journal that she found and finds a picture of Bill Pullman.
Ooh, the mystery deepens.
And she also finds a picture of a family of three, a mom, a dad, and a son. And the son looks like the little boy that she just saw in the closet. But in this photo, the mom's face is ripped out. And the photo's crumpled and actually looks like maybe it was even torn up and taped back together. And as she's looking at this, she sees the little boy is now on the staircase, kind of peeking his head through the stair banister. And she looks up at him and in Japanese says, like, hello, my name is Karen. What is your name? And he tells her his name is Toshio. And right as he says that, the phone rings and scares her. And she runs into the other room to try to answer the phone. But the phone is off. She was using her cell phone earlier to talk to Alex. This is the house phone now ringing and she tries to answer it, but it's off the hook and she doesn't know where it is. So it just goes to voicemail. So she hears the voicemail and it is from someone named Susan, who is apparently another child of Emma's, who's saying like, hey, Michael, it's Michael and Jennifer. It's Susan. I'm just calling to check in on mom, seeing how you guys are doing. and I'm a little worried, like, give me a call back. And as Karen is listening to this voicemail, we see a shadow just cross behind her in the hallway. And it's really creepy.
Wait, Michael and Jennifer are, who
so
are they?
So Michael is
the daughter-in-law, I guess.
Michael is her son, and okay. Jennifer is the daughter-in-law. We haven't met them yet, so it's meant to be a little confusing at this point.
All right.
Then we hear some kind of moaning and mumbling coming from Emma's room, like Emma's maybe talking to herself or something. So Karen goes in and kind of goes to her bedside, and she's like, what is it, what's going on? And Emma is looking up at the corner of her bedroom, looking scared, wide-eyed, just staring at this one spot, like not looking away from this specific spot in the corner of her room. And then Karen kind of eventually gets her attention, is like, what's going on, what's wrong? And Emma eventually turns to look at her and says, I just want her to leave me alone. And it's the first thing she said. As she is looking at Karen, they're looking at each other. We see in the background, that same corner of the room, hair starting to drip down from the ceiling. Ooh, and it's like this big web of hair forming in the corner.
Ew.
And it eventually forms into the same woman we saw earlier. I'm actually going to look, what was her name? Just so we can refer to her as something. Her name is Kayako. And so it forms into Kayako, and she sweeps down, and Emma sees her first. Emma is completely terrified, looks like shocked and stunned, and kind of falls backwards. And Karen turns, and Kayako comes in Karen's face and kind of makes a scary, screamy, that same kind of like noise. And it cuts to black. And then we go back in time, seemingly not too far back in time, but to when this family bought this house. So we see Emma and her two children, Michael and Susan, and Michael's wife, Jennifer, who's Clea DuVall. Mm-hmm. We see them coming and touring the property, to considering buying it. And they're being led around with a realtor, looking around like they like it. And the mom Emma immediately like goes into that room and stares in the corner, stares in like up into the corner. And Michael says, Mom, what's wrong? What's up? What are you looking at? And she just, again, won't answer and is just staring at this corner. And we see downstairs, the realtor has kind of separated from them. They're kind of walking around viewing it on their own, and the realtor is down, notices the downstairs bathtub is filled with water, and he looks annoyed and kind of walks up to it, reaches in to try to pull out the bath plug.
Anytime anyone in a horror movie reaches into water, I just don't want to know what happens after that.
It's never good, and it's not good this time either. And he reaches in, and we see a small hand grab him and a face emerge, and it is the little boy again, and it scares him and knocks him backwards, and then the boy is gone, and he is panting, breathing heavily as Michael comes in and sees the realtor like wet on the floor now, and Michael's just like, we'll take it. It's like, you came in and your mom is just staring at one spot, and you walked into this room with this realtor looking terrified, fallen wet on the floor. But they decide to
don't ask any questions. We'll take That's it. Another thing. It's, don't ask any questions.
This is a house for us.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
So we see them moving in shortly afterwards, bringing in boxes and unpacking. And we learn that Michael and Jennifer will be living there as well. So it'll be Michael, Jennifer, and Emma, and Susan works and lives nearby. And Jennifer is seeming pretty stressed about being in Japan. They're all American, and she's like, I feel like I got so lost today. Nobody could help me. Nobody spoke English. She is seemingly making not too much of an effort to learn the language, and is, I don't know, a little more, doesn't really want to be there. And it's clear that Michael is the one that initiated this move, and he's like, just give it your best try, please. Like, I promise it'll get better. And, you know,
is Michael Bill Pullman?
No.
Oh, okay.
Michael is William Mapother. And like, the second I saw him, I was like, it's Ethan from Lost. And I don't know how I remember that. I mean, I guess I was into Lost, but I didn't even remember that there was a character named Ethan, but my brain had just retained, this is Ethan from Lost. And it said it instantly. And I was like, Ethan from Lost, that's him. And then I had to look it up and I was like, I guess it is. I don't even remember what his character did or anything about him, but I know his name.
Ethan from Lost. Got it.
I'm going to guess that Bill Pullman was Emma's husband. And maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe. But we'll see. We'll find out.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Time will tell.
Time will tell.
So yeah, it seems that, am I calling him Michael or Matthew?
Michael.
Michael.
Okay. His name is Matthew.
It's one of those interchangeable ones. It could be either. It could be either.
There's nobody named Michael. So if I say Michael, you know who I'm referring to. And that is Matthew.
It's Matthew.
That's great. I'm pretty sure you've been saying Michael the whole time.
I think you've been saying Michael.
I think I have too. Well,
all right. Wait, and remind me who Susan is again.
Susan is Matthew's sister, so Emma's daughter.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I was
all right.
Confused
and she's
as well.
and at the point where Sarah Michelle Gellar is like in the house, Susan is where? We don't know.
She's the one who called.
She's the one who left a voicemail.
She's the one left a okay.
So
got
she
it, got
doesn't
it.
Live
okay,
there, but she comes by sometimes. She works nearby. But Matthew and Jennifer live there, and they were
got
supposed
it.
To be home. And they're not. And now we're back in time and seeing this happen. And it's clear that Matthew was the one that wanted to move here. And Jennifer is just kind of, she is going to be taking care of Emma while Matthew's at work and stuff. But then they've also got Yoko as added help. He like mentions like you can, like Yoko's here to help you. Or Yoko will be here to help you. And then we see Jennifer taking a nap on the couch. I guess a day later or so, Michael's at work. And sorry,
Matthew.
Fuck Matthew. And I've because I've said it too many times now, and now it's default in my head. And as she's sleeping, we hear a little wet footsteps running.
Oh no.
A wet footstep is worse than a dry footstep, I think.
Yes.
And it wakes her up, and she turns to look towards Emma's room, and we see that there's a big mess again. There's a bowl of ramen overturned and more trash on the floor, and she's kind of approaching Emma like, Emma, what happened? And then sees small child-sized footprints have run through the ramen spill. And so she sees that and is like, well, that's not Emma's footprints, and starts kind of following the footsteps upstairs. And she peeks around the corner of the staircase and sees a black cat at the top of the stairs and looks confused. And as she's staring at it, two hands come and grab the cat and totally scares her. And she yells, who's there? Who is that? And doesn't answer, but you still hear, you know, the meowing and more footsteps. And somebody's up there. And she slowly goes up to investigate.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
And as she gets to the top, she opens a door to that same room. And we just see her go in slowly inside, and then the door slams behind her. And then we cut to Matthew coming home that evening, and he comes inside, sees how messy the place is, kind of like, what's going on here? Goes to Emma's room, says, Mom, are you okay? What's going on? Where's Jennifer? And his mom doesn't say anything. Emma doesn't say anything and is just kind of pointing in the direction of upstairs. And Matthew starts looking for Jennifer, for his wife, and starts walking upstairs and goes into their bedroom. And she is laying in the bed, and he says, oh, thank God, Jennifer, I didn't know where you were. And as he gets closer and turns the light on, he sees that she is just completely like frozen in fear. Her eyes are just wide and looks like she is in shock. And she's just breathing like,
That's really scary.
With her eyes just wide, staring at the ceiling. He runs to her. It's like, Jennifer, I'll call an ambulance. Like, what's happening? What's going on? And as he is at her bedside, the little boy pops up on the other side of the bed, opens his mouth, lets out a big old cat meow.
What?
The cat meow thing is really strange. I mean, I think it is scary, I guess, but it's also funny.
It's funny. It's more funny than anything else.
It's certainly not as scary as the
But seeing someone in shock, like scared and in shock like that, is very scary.
Mm-hmm. And Matthew stumbles back. Oh, and he leans back against the closet and hears something happening in the closet and leans his head back. So he's looking up into the closet. And again, Toshio, the little boy, pops out, wide mouth, screams in his face, cut to black. Big jump scare.
A scream or a meow? A regular scream this time.
I think this one was maybe a regular scream.
Toshio's a really cute name.
It's a really cute name.
He's a very cute boy. And he's always with this little black cat. And I read in the trivia.
I like him.
I read in the trivia that this little boy was scared of cats.
Oh, no.
He's in a horror movie and he's too scared of cats. That's not okay.
It's a cute cat, though. I like a black cat. And apparently in Japan, black cats are supposed to be good luck. Like here, they're bad luck. But
I like black cats. I mean, I like all cats, but I really do like black cat.
Me too. Okay, so we then it cuts to black and we come back up on Alex arriving at the house that Karen had called, and he slides the door open to Emma's room and sees Emma laying motionless and kind of comes up to her and says, Emma, and as he gets closer, realizes that she is dead.
Oh, okay.
And wow. It scares him and he kind of jumps backwards and he jumps into Karen, who is huddled in the corner of the room, now staring at the top corner of the room where what's her face? This is Kayako came from. And she is also frozen in shock and not responding. He says, Karen, are you okay? We cut to ambulance and police showing up, and we meet Detective Nakagawa, who is interviewing Alex and kind of asking what happened. And he says, you know, her son and daughter-in-law were supposed to come home, and I don't know why they're not here. And the detective says, we've called his work. Matthew didn't show up for work today. And Alex says, you know, actually, Yoko is supposed to be the one that was here, and she's also didn't show up to work today. So it's seeming bad. And
so also, like, I'm wondering what the sequence of events is here in terms of timing.
I was feeling confused too. I think it's really quick. I think the flashback was literally 2 days, like them buying the house, I think was literally like a week ago.
Okay, that's what it felt like. Yeah.
So
okay.
Them not showing up to work and stuff was like because of whatever happened in the flashback we yes. just saw.
So that's okay. I was confused at first because I thought we were flashing back to like a year ago, and that then it doesn't make sense. But yeah, I think it's a very recent. They've very recently moved in.
Okay.
So the detective, the two main detectives on the case, but the main detective is Detective Nakagawa, and he sees that the phone is off the hook. He again listens to the voicemail from Susan. It's kind of like clocking, like, okay, we got to talk to Susan. Then sees that the phone is off the hook and presses the page button, like locate the phone. So it starts beeping and they're kind of following it in the house. And we know where it's going to be. It's...
Man, that really takes me back to 2004. You remember trying to find your home phone?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Your parents being like, is the phone in your room? You know, like that deal.
And he follows the beeps upstairs and it's coming from inside that closet.
Oh, God.
He opens the closet, sees the phone, and notices the open roof ceiling of the closet opening to the attic above. And him and the other detective crawl up there and get completely up there, climb up, and are shining their flashlights around. And we see Matthew and Jennifer dead, holding each other in the corner of this attic.
Oh, God. Okay.
And then the other detective shines a flashlight and says, who does that belong to? And we see it is a lower human jaw.
Oh.
Just detached from a body sitting on the attic floor.
Extra jaw. Just a spare jaw.
Is it... What's the state of this jaw? Is it all bone or is it fresh off a face?
It's fresh off a face. It's bloody.
Oh, yuck. Yuck.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. Yuck.
Bad. Ooh, ugh.
Then we go to Karen in the hospital. Her boyfriend Doug is there at her bedside comforting her, saying, I'm so sorry. They told me what happened. And she's like, what did they tell you? And he says, they told me that woman died in front of you. Like, that's so horrible that Emma died and you are there. And she says, like, I don't even know what happened. Like, that's not all that happened. Like, something else happened. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Okay, here we go. Is Doug going to be the kind of boyfriend who's going to believe her and support his girlfriend? Or is he going to be the kind of boyfriend that's like... You're crazy. Like, you've just gone through something hard.
Oh, honey, you're just in shock. Oh, you poor thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This has been tough for you. I can tell.
It's 2004, so I'm going to guess bad boyfriend.
You might be.
We'll see.
You might be surprised. Doug might surprise us. And then we cut to Susan. We meet Susan, who is at work in Tokyo, again, making a phone call from her desk, calling Matthew. Saying, I'm getting really freaked out. Can you call me back?
No one notified her that they found her brother and he's dead.
I think they're trying to call her. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make... Because she has a cell phone. She's calling them on a cell phone. But maybe she didn't leave the cell phone number on the message machine, on the voicemail.
Maybe. I just feel like, hey, officers, if you come to the home and you find the mother, the brother, and the wife dead, you tell the sister.
Yeah. And they are like, we got to go find her. That's for sure on their to-do list. So let's give them a benefit of the doubt and say they didn't have the phone number, so they have to physically go to her. But they should know where she works. I think they're cops. They should fucking have been able to figure it out. So we see she's leaving the voicemail and she says, call me back on my cell phone. I'm going home now. And she packs up her stuff, starts leaving work. And as she's leaving, it's like an empty office build, a big like skyscrapery building and empty nighttime. And she walks out into the hall and some of the lights are out at the end of the hall. So it's like very dark at the end of the hall and just looks scary. And she gets spooked and just gets like a shiver and walks in the other direction. And then starts running. She kind of hears, I think, that the croaky noise and starts running for the stairwell. And as she gets in the stairwell, the croaky noise is louder. So she's hearing like, that's pretty good. That's pretty much what it sounds like.
That was
like.
really good.
That was scary. I wouldn't want to hear it.
That was really fucking scary.
And she's hearing that coming from below. The lights are flickering in the staircase now. And it's she's super freaked out. And she looks down the middle of the spiral of the staircase and sees a woman kind of climbing up the staircase on her hands and knees, and her skin looks all white with her like veins coming through, like a little corpsey looking. And she's freaked out and immediately runs out of the staircase, but her key gets caught in the door. And she's trying to like rip herself. It's like a key card attached to her belt. So she's trying to like rip it out, and she breaks the key off and falls backwards. God. And as she does, and the door is closing, the Kayako's face like just peeks through the door, the doorway at her. It doesn't like lunge at her or anything. It just looks at her like wide eyes, and she screams and runs. And she runs into the security office of the building, and there's one security guard on duty, and she's basically like in Japanese saying on the something on the 10th floor, something help, please help on the something on the 10th floor. And the security guard like calms her down, sits her down, and is like, I'll go check it out. And she watches him on the surveillance footage as he goes up to where she told him she just saw someone. He opens the door and goes inside, and the door closes behind him, and she's just watching this empty hallway.
Oh no.
Like on the edge of her freaking seat. And he comes back out and seems fine and starts walking back to where she is, and she does a big old phew, leans back in her chair, then something catches her eye in this same hallway, which is now empty. And it looks like just kind of black smoke or something, maybe hair.
Hair?
is coming out from underneath the door that he was just in. And it gets bigger and darker and forms into the shape of a woman and starts walking. And the camera's like, the surveillance camera's flickering and glitching. And she's just approaching closer to the camera. And Susan is like, fuck this, I'm out of here, grabs her shit and just runs and leaves the building. Yeah.
Honestly, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair. But also, unfortunately, this is not a location-centric haunting. This seems to be a person-specific haunting.
It does seem to be.
You need to find a demonologist straight away. straight away.
So she bolts for home, and she gets into her apartment. Again, she's in like a little skyscrapery building, and it doesn't matter. I don't know why I said that.
I also like how you're calling it a little skyscrapery building. Like it's a tiny one. It's just a little one.
Yeah, it's a big one.
A little super, super tall building.
And she goes inside and panicked, gets into her apartment, locks the door, and sits on the couch. She's kind of out of breath and looking around. And then her cell phone rings, and it's Matthew. And she answers it, and she's like, Matthew, thank God. Like, where have you been? And he says, I'm downstairs.
Right row.
And she says, okay. He says, what floor are you on again? Like, what's your number? She says her apartment number. And she says, I'll buzz you in. And she presses the little buzzer and hangs up. And the second she hangs up, there's a knock at the door. Like, he's just instantly there. And she's like, what the
hey, fuck? Ghost, play it cool, man.
Yeah, but just to make it a little more believable.
If you're going to pretend to be a human, at least put a little more effort in.
But Susan walks over and looks in out the peephole. And it's Matthew. And she's like, opens the door. It's like, Matthew, what the? And he's gone. And she's scared again and looks down at her cell phone, which rings again. Matthew answers it.
No! Get out of here.
She runs back in her apartment, locks the door, and jumps right in her bed. She's so freaked out. And she's breathing heavily in the bed. And then at the foot of the bed, something moves. And she looks down, and there's a big lump of a person-sized lump at the foot of her bed.
In
her bed with her, moving upwards towards her. Her eyes get big and wide. She's terrified, and she lifts up the sheets. And there is Kyoko facing her, going, it pulls her down into her bed, and she disappears. Very similar to the Nightmare on Elm Street, Johnny Depp being sucked into the bed scene, I thought. This is a scene that Caroline, I remember talking about on the Witch episode. She's like, not even your bed is safe.
That's right. Yeah.
That's so scary. God.
Fuck. Oof.
Then we see Detective Nakagawa is at Karen's hospital room, kind of talking to her, interviewing her about everything that happened. And he shows her the picture of that she had found of the mother, father, and son. And she confirms, like, yes, that's the little boy that I saw. And Detective Nakagawa looks a little confused by that. And he says, he tells her that they found Matthew and Jennifer in the attic. He says it seems that Matthew killed Jennifer and then killed himself. As they're having this conversation, the other detective pulls Detective Nakagawa out and tells him that they went to Susan's apartment and she wasn't there. But he said the weird thing is that the apartment was locked from the inside, like it had the chain lock on from the inside. So it looks like she came home, but she's not there. And we know why that is.
Yeah, she's in her bed. Did you check inside her bed?
Did you check in the depths of her bed? Perhaps the portal between her bed and whatever spirit realm?
Yeah, there is. That's where it is. Did you check all the portals?
Did you check the bed portal that is existing?
And the other detective at this point also says to Detective Nakagawa, kind of knowingly, you know, they were the first family to live there since the other incident 3 years ago.
Oh, that's not seems a long time like ago, 3 years
this,
ago.
Yeah, this other incident seems to be an important incident.
Is Bill Pullman the dad in this picture with the boy?
Mm-mm.
Where is Bill Pullman?
I know. we see Doug taking Karen home, and they're on a bus on their way home, and she's, you know, just telling him more that she's super freaked out and something felt really wrong inside of that house. He's kind of comforting her, has his arm around her, and she says, yeah, it felt like something else was there with us. And she turns to look out the bus window, and looking back at her as her reflection is Kyoko. Goes really loud. It was a big jump scare. It got me so good. I really leapt out of my skin. And Karen jumps and then, you know, double take, and it's her regular reflection again. And she kind of turns to Doug and is like, I just want to go home. I want to go home. I need rest. I've had a big day.
I need a place that I know will be safe. No question.
No questions asked. My bed.
Definitely my bed.
A nice hot shower.
Oh, the shower scene.
Oh my God. If I'm scared of a ghost, a shower is the last fucking thing I'm doing. Certainly not alone. I am not above being like, you're going to stand right there while I shower.
Yeah.
And you are going to make sure that I get out of this shower.
Yeah.
Really what I'm going to do is I'm going to be taking a bath, curtain open. You're going to be here the whole time.
You need a buddy.
That's what partnership is for.
Mm-hmm. A bath buddy. Shower buddy.
If you
buddy.
Live alone, you just don't get clean. If you have a partner, they watch you.
Mm-hmm. But she hops in that shower. And it's a lot like shorter of a scene than I thought. It's basically, she just washed, cleaning her hair and reaches back and feels another set of fingers protruding from her head.
Horrifying.
And grabs at it a few times. It disappears. She's kind of whips around, looks around. Nobody's there with her. And that's it. She's just shocked by it.
They had to make it a short scene because she was allergic to the water.
It was supposed to be the rest of the movie. They're like, in that shower. Like,
we're going to have to rewrite the whole third act.
Make it dry. I don't know. Figure it out.
Move it out of the shower. Then we see Alex back at the university, little building that they were in the beginning, and kind of finishing up his work for the day. Leaving the building, it's again empty, nighttime, just him. And as he packs up his stuff and heads down the stairs,
this is a movie about the dangers of overworking yourself.
Yeah, working late. Working late is not okay.
We can't work.
Don't be the last one to leave your office.
Mm-mm. No, don't do that.
And he sees Yoko walking in the front door of this building. And she is walking.
What's her jaw like?
Well, we can't see her jaw just yet. Her head is tipped forward, so you can't see her face at all. Kind of her hair is hanging in her face. She's looking pretty slumped, and she's slowly kind of sliding her feet along, walking very zombie-like. And she is pouring blood. There, she leaves a blood trail where she goes, and Alex notices this, kind of reaches down and sees that it's blood, and is like, Yoko, are you okay? Are you okay? And she just walks past him, walks down the stairs, maybe to where her office was, and he follows her at the, and he's at the top of the stairs, and he slips in her blood, and she turns to face him, and he again says, Yoko, are you okay? And she finally looks up, and we see no lower jaw, just a gaping hole. And she does a little scream also. And he screams, and it's very scary, and cuts to black.
Very scary. I feel like if someone is dripping so much blood that you slip in it, you don't have to ask them if they're okay.
Right. Don't like follow them down the hall. Just call 911.
Absolutely not. No, I'm not okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a safe bet. That's a safe bet.
I doubt that would have even helped him in this scenario, though. I don't think there was coming out of this for him.
No, probably not. Then we get a freaking research montage. I feel like it's been a while since we've had one of these.
Check it off your bingo.
Love a research montage. Who's doing
Karen's
the research?
Karen's doing the research montage. She is hooked in this mystery now, and it's got to figure out what's going on. She's researching the family that died in this house. That's what she has learned from the detective. Who is this little boy? Who is this mom? And finds an article about them. And it seems that the husband killed his wife and child and then himself in this house. And
but one child, wait, or is Kyoko not a child?
Kyoko's
not a child.
Wife.
She's the wife,
or the woman. The woman. I'm assuming she's
she just looks much more girlish when she's a ghost, because she's all
okay. Sorry, I was confused. For some reason, I thought both of them were children. I don't know why I thought that this whole time.
Kids are creepy, and creepy ghosts could have been a kid.
Could have been a kid. Thought could it was a kid. Okay, got it.
And as Karen is looking at this newspaper, she sees a photo of Bill Pullman in the same issue. Right below, this man jumped off a balcony. News the same day.
The same day this murder-suicide happened?
The morning, the morning after, yeah. So it was printed in the same newspaper. So she sees it right next to each other, and she recognizes this man from the photo in the diary that she found. And so she's onto something here. We got a good clue. We got a good lead. And we see Detective Nakagawa at his office. He had previously asked for the surveillance tapes from Susan's work and home because now she's missing as well. And he pops in that surveillance tape. We see what we saw earlier, but extended because Susan ran away really quickly. So we see Kayako moving closer and closer towards the camera, and Detective Nakayaga, again, working way too late by himself in a big empty building.
No!
And she gets closer and closer to the camera until the camera is completely black, and then two eyes just open really big in the screen, and he kind of stumbles backwards, and then the screen goes back to normal, and he's kind of looking around. He's all freaked out. And we cut to Karen leaving her apartment early the next morning. She leaves a note for Doug saying, I've had to do something. I love you. I'll be back. And she goes to speak to Bill Pullman's widow and finds her apartment and knocks on the door and is like, I'm sorry. I have some questions about your husband. Like, would you mind talking to me? And the woman shows her all, is like happy to talk about him. He's like, yeah, this is photos from our first date. He was so great. And is kind of showing her all these photographs of them together. And Karen notices in the background of every single photograph is the same woman. And she's looking at her one at a time. And we come to figure out that it's probably Kayako.
As like a regular woman?
As a regular woman.
Not ghosty.
Okay. This is an alive
woman. And she's just in all these photos. And the wife hasn't noticed this?
I guess not. She's very much in the background. She's not like right next to them. It's like there'll be 10 people in the background. It's like him at the university. He was a teacher at this same university.
Okay.
But yeah, she's in all of them. And then as she realizes this, it cuts to another flashback. We see Bill Pullman, Peter, as a teacher at his place of work. He's going through his locker and one of his coworkers comes up to him and hands him a stack of mail. And he's like, you got another piece of mail from this lady, Kayako. And Bill Pullman's kind of like, she says she was one of my students, but I don't remember her. Like, this is so weird. Why does she keep writing to me? And he looks at the address on the letter and decides he's going to go visit her and figure out why this woman is writing him so many letters.
What do the letters say?
I don't know. We don't see them. It seems like we should have seen them. I have the same question. but he finds the house and he sees Toshio kind of looking out the window with he's got a cut on his face and a bandage on his chin and he looks really sad. And Peter opens the door and goes in and he knocks and nobody answers and he goes in and he wants to help this little boy. And he goes in and finds the little boy in the bathroom near the bathtub, kind of half hanging into the bathtub water, and pulls him out. And the little boy just looks really sad. And the cat's there too. And he pulls them both out and takes them into the living room, sits them down, is like, where are your parents? Toshio's not responding. And he's just, I guess, going to wait there for his parents to return. And he's kind of looking out the window, looking to see if they're coming back. And we see Toshio behind him, his mouth open real wide, and let out a big meow.
Oh, no.
And he, doesn't even react to this. Peter doesn't react. He's like, oh, the cat's meowing. Doesn't even turn around. Okay. He's still looking out the window.
Oh, sure.
Then we go back to Karen, who is finds Detective Nakagawa to kind of give him this new information that she found this photo of Peter, who died the morning after the family was killed. And this is the photo that she found in the diary. And Detective Nakagawa says, I don't think that he committed suicide. 3 years ago, my colleagues were investigating those murders, that the deaths at that house, and two of them died and one of them disappeared. And I've never seen any of them again. And he kind of explains the curse, the Onryo curse, and says, you know, when someone dies in a rage or in deep sorrow, death stays with that place and death becomes part of that place and there's no escaping it. And Karen's kind of like, well, I've been in that place and so have you. So we need to fucking figure this out. And Detective Nakagawa is looking a little defeated at this point, and it looks like Karen's got a little more fire and will to kind of solve this mystery. And then we see Detective Nakagawa back at in his office at his desk, looking through photos of him with what we presume are the colleagues that died and look like they were all good friends. He's looking really sad. And scared that this is also after him now. And he decides that he's going to go burn the house down. So we see him getting some jugs of gasoline and going into the house. And as he goes in, he hears a little boy crying. And so he sets down his jugs of gasoline and goes into the bathroom. And we see Toshio drowning in the bathtub, and he reaches in, pulls him out, and tries to save him. And as he does, we see a man behind Detective Nakagawa, and he turns, and the man I think has a box cutter, our favorite, and it cuts away.
This movie cuts away every single time there's something like a murder happens at all.
And you know what? I think it's PG-13, and I think that's why. I think they wanted it to be PG-13, and so it's also probably why it's like not as scary, is because it's just, yeah, leaving the implication of violence without being able to really show anything too graphic.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think that's right.
Interesting.
So Karen gets home and Doug's not there. And she's looking around, where's Doug? And she sees that she has a voicemail on her message machine and presses it. And it's Doug. And he says, hey, Karen, I just didn't know where you were all day today. Did you go to that house? He says, I'm going to go there. I'm going to see if you're there.
No.
Doug, no.
And Karen is really not pleased to hear it. She panics. She runs out of the house. We see Doug in the house going in. He is on the phone calling her again. And we see that the old shadow moving behind him that he doesn't notice. We go back to Karen running as fast as she can, makes it to the house. And she goes in and is calling Doug. It doesn't respond. And she walks up the stairs and the lighting changes from night to day. And
she
sees Bill Pullman. And it's like she is now going into the past and she is witnessing the events of that day. And she's looking very confused, but she's following Bill Pullman. And we see,
I mean, when you're going after a mystery and it just presents itself to you, you're going to keep seeing what's up.
You're going to keep seeing what's up. That's right.
Thank you so much, Spirit Realm. I would love to know the answer.
So she sees Peter has gotten Toshio kind of situated in his room. And then Peter leaves Toshio in the room and wanders into the back room of this house. And it seems like all of the family photos of the three of them, the wife's face has been ripped out of all of them. And he's kind of brushing through all these photos, like all of them are the same. And underneath this pile of photographs is the journal that Karen found later. And he opens it, and it is Kayako's journal. And it just is all about Peter. It's like, I love Peter, 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 Peter. It's like a fifth grade girl's like notebook of just like hearts, Peter, I love Peter. Uh-oh. Peter and Kayako forever.
Oh,
it's very interesting. I mean,
so she became obsessed with him. The husband found out, killed her and the son.
Seems that way.
But he doesn't even remember having her as a student.
Yeah, I would have liked a little more backstory into how this obsession developed, personally.
Yeah. Especially that's so deeply one-sided.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, was she a student and he just doesn't remember, or what happened? Yeah, I have questions. But yes, she is obsessed with him, and he kind of sets that down and goes over to the closet in this room and sees that all of the faces that have been torn out of the photos are pinned on the closet door. So it's just like a bunch of her little faces. And he hears something and opens the closet door, again, finds that false top, slides it aside, and Kayako's dead body falls out of it. Yikes. And not a ghost, her actual corpse that is wrapped in a shower curtain or something, looks like it has been really sliced with that box cutter. Very gruesome, falls down on him. He freaks out, runs out of the house. Oh, and again, Karen is still like following all of this and sees him open the door to the room that Toshio is in and just have a look of horror on his face and kind of stumble out, close that door, and he runs downstairs and runs out of the house, leaves the house. And Karen is still in the house and opens Toshio's door to see what he saw. And we see the father hanging and just swinging, and he has hung himself. And Toshio is, I believe, still downstairs drowned in the bathtub. Oh, and Karen gets little flashes, even more. The spirit realm is really laying it out for her here.
I love it. Thank you, spirit realm.
And so she gets even more little flashes now just shown to her. And we see, yes, that the father found this diary, went crazy, ripped her face out of all these photos, killed her. And we see him grab the cat and drown the cat too. And drown the son in the same bathtub. And then, yeah, he drowns both the son and the cat in the bathtub and then hangs himself. He's the worst. He's awful.
And so he's the worst. And so the boy that Peter was interacting with was already ghost version. I think
that was already ghost version, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I mean, I get it. It's a horror movie. This is what has to happen. But under no circumstances do you enter a stranger's home, see a diary all about you and them being obsessed with you, and then you keep exploring.
I know.
Also, I guess he killed himself so he doesn't care about being found out, but it's very funny to be like, here, she's in here. Here's all the pictures of her face. The corpse is in here. Look, look, detectives. Here's the body. Yeah, it's right here.
Yeah.
This is the death closet of the woman. Here's her face.
Well, this guy clearly wasn't thinking very logically.
I don't think he was thinking with a clear head.
Not a clear head.
No.
And then it comes back to present day. Karen is up in the house, and it kind of, the lighting changes back to nighttime. She goes downstairs. She's still looking for Doug, can't find him. And we see her pass a mirror, and her reflection is Kayako, the ghost, the bad version.
The bad one.
And she notices that, like, from her peripheral vision, that is not, wasn't right, and turns to kind of face this mirror in a moment of bravery. She's kind of like a show yourself type moment, is staring into this mirror. We know something bad is going to happen. And then a hand grabs her ankle, and it's Doug. And she looks down and grabs him. Doug, are you okay? He does not look okay. He looks, I mean, he's not, no cuts or bruises or anything, but he looks stunned, similarly to how a lot of them have looked throughout the movie.
It's interesting that first the ghost just really gives you a good scare, just, and they're like, just sit with that for a little bit.
She just freaks
and
you.
I'm going to come
and
back.
Then we'll kill you. Then we'll kill you.
I'll kill you in a little bit, but first you're just really going to have a bad day.
And so she's kind of trying to get Doug, like, figure him out, and then she starts hearing something coming from upstairs and looks at the staircase, and we see a hand come out from around the corner, a bloodied hand, and start pulling itself forward, and we see Kayako's head and arms. She is crawling down the stairs in a very kind of unnatural way. She's in her little shower curtain again, kind of bloodied, but still ghosty version, crawling down the stairs. It's very scary. And Karen looks very scared and it's kind of pushing away from her, kind of trying to drag Doug out of the house, but can't, isn't strong enough. And as she just tries to open a door, and Kyaku's face is right there in the door. She's a ghost. She doesn't have to be.
She can go wherever she wants. Yeah.
And so then she looks back at the staircase. Kyaku's gone. And then she looks down and Doug turns into Kayako. It's just like all of a sudden Kayako is in her arms.
Oh, no.
And first Kayako gets down and she crawls on top of Doug. So Karen can't get away fast enough and can't drag Doug away fast enough, and Kayako comes down and kind of gets on top of Doug, and Karen is just watching in horror, and she just basically lowers herself like face to face with Doug, and you see Doug's face, like just the color like drain out of Doug's face, and his head kind of flops to the side, kind of looking at
poor Doug.
Karen. And Doug has died, and Karen watches it and screams and is trying to get away, and then sees Kayako in the door frame, and then Kayako disappears for a second, and she runs to Doug to try to hold him, and then she's holding his dead body and is looking up and looking for help, and then the dead body turns into Kayako.
Oh, that's really mean.
It's really mean.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of screams up at her like, ugh. And Karen sees the jugs of gasoline and is like, okay, we got to burn this fucker down. And kind of, it's close. So she just reaches and knocks them over while she's kind of fighting with Kayako, and gets a lighter, and Kayako grabs her wrist to stop her from throwing it, but she just drops it. I mean, she spilled enough gasoline now that she just can drop the lighter, and it lights on fire and the screen goes to white. And again, yep, just cutting right at the moments, right at the climactic moments. And then we're at the morgue the next day, and two doctors, I guess, are saying, you know, male in his 20s, and we were able to save the house, which is great news. But he didn't make it.
Phew.
And there was one other survivor, a woman, and they're like, how did she survive? And he's like, we're still doing our investigation, like, we're not sure. And we see Karen in a hospital gown, looking catatonic-ish, kind of walking down the hallway towards this morgue to ID Doug's body, I guess. And they let her in. And as she kind of slowly approaches it, the body twitches underneath. It's still under a little blanket. Mm-hmm. And a woman's hand and hair fall down from under the blanket that look a lot like Kayako's hand and nasty hair.
Oh, no.
And she does a little double take, and it is a man's hand. It is Doug's hand, and she pulls it down, and it is Doug. And She's, maybe she was just imagining it. And then she hears. that one wasn't as good. But, and we see standing right behind her is Kayako. And she screams and it zooms in on Kayako's eyes, doing her. And that's the end of the movie.
Oh my God, those motherfuckers.
Woo-wee.
Okay, I have a nitpick, sure. Which is, wouldn't the husband be the one to come back? Because wasn't he the one really like enraged?
That's what I was kind of thinking too, but maybe also sorrow. Because I think that was one little thing that the detective threw in was like, also, it can also I guess be sorrow.
It would depend too if he killed the son and cat before he killed Kayako, then that she could be rageful.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's the. I was thinking that too. So maybe she watched him. But why would he kill the kid first?
That's not nice. Also, Kayako.
How would he kill the kid at all? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
I get you've been wronged, but also your problem's not with these people.
I don't think
Kayako. Why?
You can't.
I guess she has become this entity. Yeah.
Right. That's not her anymore. It's an evil spirit.
Yeah, but there's a few more Grudge movies. There's a Grudge 2 and a Grudge 3, I think. So maybe there's answers there.
There might be answers
there. Do you
think probably,
Kayako's in those?
I think so, yeah.
Probably be dissatisfying as we know answers in horror movies
to be. Yes.
But damn, that would have been, that would have scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have scared the hell out of me too. Scared, but yeah, even with the cutaways, that's freaky, freaky.
Freaky, freaky.
You know what's weird though, is that like still though it's the real life things that are the scariest. It's like,
absolutely.
For some reason, Sarah Michelle Gellar going in and seeing like the house being dirty and Emma like not having like fallen out of the bed and all of that, that like scares me more than Kayako scares me. Cause it's like so sad to think about someone like not being able to take care of themselves and being alone and like trying to get help and not being able to help themselves. That's so sad and scary.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad we finally freaking did it.
Finally freaking did The Grudge.
It's a big one. This is a horror mainstay.
Yeah, it's a must see.
Is that a word?
Yeah.
It is now. Yeah, Sammy, thank you for walking us through that film. Now we know.
Now we know.
Now Emily and I can be part of the cultural conversation around
Just
The Grudge
bring it
when
up
we
and,
go
yes,
back in time.
Yes, The Grudge is being talked about right now. and we can participate.
Just bring it up.
Tanley and I just go around to all of our friends and like, hey, remember The Grudge? Me too. Anyway.
have you seen The Grudge? It is pretty funny to out of context.
Oh
boy.
Well, we know what noise we got. We know a spooky noise.
We know what noise. We know what noise, Tony Heads.
So, from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch,
goodbye.
Ooh, that was spooky.
That's pretty good, I think.
I think so too.
I think.
Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. We hope you enjoyed this special Patreon bonus release. And I know you know, but I'm going to tell you again, if you would like to join the Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/TSDW podcast. Tony fucking Collette's Inner Circle is where you're going to want to be to get access to those bonus episodes. Or another way that you can support us that is super easy peasy is by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts and rating us 5 stars, which you can do on Apple Podcasts and now also on Spotify. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TSDW Podcast. And speaking of Instagram, next week's movie was chosen by an Instagram poll. You guys chose The Taking of Deborah Logan. So we will be back in 1 week with that for you. Happy New Year. We love you. Bye-bye.